LGIM Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals. Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. We're here to talk about a really popular topic, UK housing market. Now, I've not done any serious research, but if you ask me, the top three conversation topics in the UK are very likely to be weather, the traffic, and housing. Now, here to talk about it are two people much more qualified to talk about it than I am, two returning guests of such lethal cunning, Eleanor Jukes from our Real Assets team and Hetal Mehta, our senior economist in the asset allocation team. Hetal, Ellie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us back.
So I'd like to start with you, Ellie, because there is this national view of ourselves as a nation of homeowners. Has this always been the case?
Well, let's just start with the survey, actually. So, Mark, where do you live?
North London.
And what type of property do you live in?
Rented.
Is it purpose-built or is it...
No.
What kind of house is it?
Normal, semi-detached. No, detached.
And are you happy renting?
Yeah, very happy renting. Yeah. It's stayed quite steady for the last few years. It's not gone up too much.
No rogue landlord?
I mean, in my student days, there were a number of, you've chipped a thing. And I was like, I don't think I've chipped a thing. And there's suddenly a 400 bill when I move out. But no, apart from that,
you're all good.
Pretty good landlords.
And Hetal?
I am not renting. Own the house that we live in.
Okay. And I also rent. So I'm not a statistician, but two out of three of us rent. So that provides a really good introduction to my argument. But you're right, Mark, to point out that although we have this British sort of legacy of home ownership, if you look right back to the dawn of time, by which I mean the 1900s, actually most people did rent. And that was around 70 to 80% of the UK population rented.
Wow. That
changed, unsurprisingly, after the war where some government initiatives really started to stimulate the home ownership market. Home ownership rates increased, rental rates decreased. But then we started to see some really big structural changes to the market, particularly around the 1970s, where right to buy came in, and again, that pushed up owner-occupier rates. But then if we roll forward time back to the 1980s and to the 1990s, we saw things like the buy-to-let mortgages come in, which are incredibly popular, alongside the deregulations of rents and tenancies. So a really big change in the composition of the housing market. But what this did result in is a really fragmented ownership of rental property. So it was known at the time as the private rental sector, so PRS, but around 90% of rental stock was in sort of very small private landlord ownership. So
this would be people who have, say, bought a second home and just are renting it out for a little bit of extra income to cover the mortgage and a bit on top of that.
Exactly. Then there's a spread within that. Some people had huge portfolios, but as I said, most of it was around 90% was in the very, very small fragmented ownership. A lot of it wasn't purpose-built for a rental market, and there were very few, as you alluded to, professional landlords offering a professional service. So a really big change from right back in the 1900s and from what we see today. But what's really interesting is if you think just back to 2012, notable for many things, not least the Olympics, of course. Mm. And if you remember over in Stratford by the Olympic Park, there was all those huge blocks of accommodation for the athletes, so the Olympic Park Village, and for the Olympic family. And when we finished the Olympics, they were then bought by Fizzy Living, who are a professional landlord. And that really was the start of what we call the build-to-rent sector in the UK. So purpose-built rental homes offered for institutional type leases and with a really good professional managed service. Mm. And since then, BTR, as we know it, has started to evolve and mature, and it's a really interesting bit of the market.
Interesting. So, I was actually living in Mile End, so just one tube stop down from Stratford at the time, and you really saw this suddenly, and I'd never seen it before, but all of these signs going up saying, let's come rent at one of these brand new purpose-built flats. And the rents that they're offering seem to be very competitive versus, you know, the standard private landlord stuff that I'd been dealing with for the last 5 years in London. And it was all very attractive. So do you think this is going to be a much bigger part of the market?
I certainly think that we are going to see further decline in the private rental sector, so that converted stock, and the rise of the institutional landlords. I mean, just looking at the space now where we are at the end, coming towards the end end of 2018, there are around 20,000, that's where the number came from, built-to-rent units within the UK that are owned by a professional institutional landlord. So that's people like L&G, like ourselves, but also M&G and LaSalle. It's an area of the market that we are increasingly educated about and comfortable with and are looking to expand within.
So this change in the UK's housing stock, Hetzel, if I could turn to you, so what's really happening in the market? Could you put a bit more context around this change that we're seeing, both now and in the recent history?
Yeah, sure. So over the last few years, if you take the last 20 years, for example, we've been seeing, obviously, the number of dwellings or total houses and flats, etc., all picking up. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the occupation of those, we saw a bit of a shift for a number of years. We were actually seeing the owner-occupied bit declining. And that's
only people who own their own house.
Yes, that's right. People who own their own house and live there. And that was something we'd actually seen a declining trend for a number of years. That meant all of the net extra supply of housing was being taken up by renters, in particular the rented privately bit, i.e. buy-to-let.
Yep.
And that's something that a couple of years ago started to concern us, that with all of the tax changes that were coming through, who would be buying those marginal houses? Mm-hmm. Now, having fast-forwarded a couple of years and looked at the latest data, I've actually seen a surprising uptick in that owner-occupied bit and a slight decline in the privately rented. Now, this could be the very early signs of the tax changes coming through.
And by tax changes, you mean the
buy-to-let, the extra stamp duty,
okay.
The extra costs associated with that, the tax changes, how much you can claim back.
So it's actually not as attractive for you to, when you have a pot of capital, maybe later on in life, to then buy a second house and rent it out. It's just no longer tax efficient, is what we're saying?
Yes. So the government has made those changes and they will be phased in over a number of years.
Okay.
So we're only really at the beginning of that process. It's a 3-4 year process. But perhaps already in 2017, we were seeing some decline in the attractiveness of buy-to-let come through. But probably even more surprising was the sharp uptick we'd seen in the owner-occupied section. Given that the affordability statistics we look at, so house price-to-income ratio, for example, we haven't really seen a big improvement, and yet we saw a big jump in the number of people who were owning and living in their own houses. So it's a bit of a puzzle for us economists as to why that might be happening. It could be pent-up demand. Mm-hmm. Could also be the influence of Help to Buy initiatives from the government.
That's been a very popular scheme.
Indeed. And I think the statistics are that about 45% of new builds are Help to Buy. Mm-hmm. So that can start to explain
that shift. So construction house builders have really gotten on this trend as well.
Exactly. But also interesting from a sort of macroeconomic perspective is also what's happening to house prices themselves. So we obviously have supply increasing, but we've got to look at the demand side as well. We've got a very strong labour market and people are in a position to maybe save more and put more money towards their deposit.
Tell us more about what makes a strong labour market in this case. Is it wages? Is it unemployment? What are your indicators here?
So it's both of those. So unemployment being as low as 4%, which is the lowest it's been in more than a generation. And also wages are starting to finally pick up. So wage growth is now close to 3%, which is actually higher than the rate of inflation. So that real wage squeeze that we'd seen is finally coming to an end. But that said, we have a lot of uncertainty in the economy. You know, can't get away from talking about Brexit. And as such, we have seen house prices slow. So we're not really seeing declines at a UK level. It's more just a deceleration, and we expect house prices to stabilise. But there is actually a regional divergence that's worth talking about. So in London in particular, we have actually seen house prices start to fall outright. Transactions are down by more than 20%, and that's usually a good indicator of where house prices are going. And there's a bit of a trickle through. London tends to be a leading indicator for the other regions, maybe by about 3 to 6 months. So if we did see London start to stabilise, that would be a more positive sign
for the rest of the UK. I guess that's where a lot of people's first instinct, I mean, it's certainly here in the city, a lot of people look at London housing and say, oh, wow, it's so expensive, or it's seen such a growth. But actually, if you take a much more regional approach to it, I imagine you guys have a much clearer picture of the broader UK housing market as a whole.
Yeah, so London is clearly the biggest market, mm-hmm. but yes, you know, we sometimes when we're based in our London bubble, have to realise that there's a big chunk of the economy that is related to housing, and that is spread right across the UK.
So I'd like to, so Ellie, the structural shift in the housing supply that Hetal referenced here. Obviously, we have an excellent perspective on this as the Real Assets team of which you're a part. Could you talk to us more about how you're seeing it from a perspective of a major investor?
It is a really interesting area of the market. I mean, Hetal talks about the small uptick in home ownership rates, but we've also seen this big structural trend towards renting. I think around 17% of the population in 2017 rented, 65% owned, and the loser really has been social housing. So we are seeing less and less people renting social housing. And there's some really interesting trends across the UK. So unsurprisingly, renting is highest in London, around 25% of the London population rents, but also weirdly Yorkshire. And I still can't provide an explanation for that. But
it's a lovely place.
It's another puzzle.
I'd rent up there. That'd be nice.
Yeah. But one of the things that we've been doing is trying to talk to our residents to understand mm-hmm. about why they rent and what's really driving this structural change towards renting. And one of the clear messages I've been picking up is that renting is no longer a residual choice. So people are renting now because they want to, rather than it just being the choice that they have to because there is nothing else.
I mean, that was always kind of the way that you'd go to school, you'd leave education, you'd buy a house, get married, have kids. I mean, that was the life plan of the British person.
Yes.
So that's changed to now I make an active choice to rent.
Well, I think the hackneyed term at the moment is journey.
Oh.
Yes, and let's carry this through. So the journey is a split in the road. And so people have moved away from home ownership towards renting. Mm-hmm. There's many reasons why. There's the kind of whole the consumer agenda. There's the flexible working and lifestyle patterns. I also have a theory, completely my own and unfounded, that as we've seen the private purpose-built student accommodation really take off across the UK, and that's led the housing market, I think, a little bit. Students come out of university having spent 3-4 years living in these really nice student blocks yeah. where every whim is catered for, and then coming out and realising life is difficult in many ways.
Things are not as clean as they once were.
I know, and there's no one to fix my heating, which has really, again, sort of moved the demand for this purpose-built, yeah. professionally managed product. One of the things that we're also seeing in the market is a move towards longer tenancies. So I know when I first started renting, you were on a rolling one-year contract. If you were lucky, you'd have a break at 6 months. You were fairly at the whim of your landlord. That yeah. is changing. We're not at the European model yet, but at least within our own product, we offer leases of 5 to 6 years. So this will give you, as a tenant, security in your rent payments over the years, but also as a landlord and as an institutional investor, you're getting a lot smoother cash flow. And that was one of the reasons why it's such an appealing institutional product. I mean, if you think about Germany, where you lived, I think about 50% of people rent in yeah. Germany. That's even higher in the Netherlands. It's up towards 60%. And it's, I think it's like a legacy lifestyle issue. People, again, it's not a residual choice. Mm-hmm. And as you say, the rights are very much in favour of the residents. When we were setting up our own build-to-rent funds, we looked at Europe and some of the best practice there. Also, of course, there's the huge multifamily sector in the States. They yeah. nail service. So we looked a lot at what they did right. So within our own schemes that we offer in L&G, you are able to customise your own apartments. We have a pet policy where you can apply to have your pet within your apartment, which has been incredibly popular. It's
sure.
one of the things that people talk about the most. And we'd like to talk about tenancies, but you know, the pets. And people see it as a home. It's a yeah. lifetime home. So in such that we have a unit in Salford or a scheme in Salford, and we've had our first build-to-rent baby. So yes, I know, very cute. So it was actually born at the apartment itself.
Wow.
So yes, sadly not called in any reference to L&G, but
no,
yeah, they
calling your child legal and general real assets is
I'd be a Scrabble
nose.
Winner, wouldn't it?
Can I ask you more? Is the changing that we're seeing in the occupation in the UK similar to similar to Europe? Are they going through a similar change, or because the rents are so much, level of renting is so much higher there? Is this the future?
I think actually in Europe it's been far more stable. It's been quite long established that people are more likely to rent in Europe. So I don't think we've seen the same change. But what we're seeing in the UK is certainly a little bit new. We obviously, in recent times, as Ellie said, become quite accustomed to owning our own homes. And that's something that, having shifted down over the last few years, is something that is notable. But maybe we're seeing the reverse of that for the reasons we've already discussed.
Interesting. So I guess this takes me on to the future of housing, if you will. Both of you have very different kind of perspectives, but it'll be so interesting to hear what you see happening in the UK housing market down the line, certainly with the government bringing in so many more new initiatives, both through the budget and other policies. Ellie, can I turn to you?
I don't think we're going to see a nation of renters. We're not going to be 100% rental. I don't think we're going to see a nation of home ownership. It's going to be somewhere in between. As you alluded to, there is rare cross-Whitehall government agreement that we need more housing. Homes England think we need around 300,000 units per year. Encouragingly, there's recognition now that that needs to be across a variety of tenures, so not just home ownership, not just build to rent, that needs to be something for everybody. So there's a real kind of choice agenda that's coming through. There's changes coming through in terms of the planning frameworks that mean that local authorities need to look strategically at the housing needs of their local catchments and make sure that that range of tenures is provided. So I think we will just continue to see BTR proliferate across the UK.
So I'm so glad you bring up the kind of choice aspect, because it is about providing new housing across all areas and all the different types of ways people want to live in housing. Can you talk to us a bit more about the range of choice that's coming through?
Yeah, so at the moment in the UK, build-to-rent has mostly been focused in town centres and city centres and really high-density urban developments. But if you look at the pipeline, so the new schemes that are being built at the moment, a really nice story is that they're about 50-50 London and the region. So it's not just providing good quality for homes for people in London. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's in our regional centres as well. Alongside that, we're starting to see a diversification into types of products. So away from the high-rise urban developments towards more of a suburban offer. It's very, very new in the UK at the moment, but we expect to see a lot more growth in those markets at the moment.
What sort of things would they look like in the suburban aspects?
Well, we've been spending a lot of time looking at what's happening in the United States.
Okay.
So they have over there their single family housing REITs. So there's a big REIT called Invitation REIT that's
backed by the Real Estate Investment Trust.
Yes, right? You're right. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, a very tax efficient vehicle that's offered in the States. And they really came into the market in 2009 after the global financial crisis and started to expand quite rapidly within the American suburbs. Their acquisition strategy is quite different to what we do in the UK. So they bought up a lot of foreclosed homes, so homes that were in distress, and then rented them out, again, with a really professional level of service. It's the same but different in the UK. So we're looking at suburban markets. Around 55% of the UK population actually live in the suburbs,
yeah,
but mostly it's owner-occupied. So we think there's demand there for rental products. So we're thinking about where and when and what that might look like. But we expect to see a very big diversification away from the urban model of high-rise towers to more low, mid-rise schemes, but again with that purpose-built, professionally managed angle.
It's all about the level of service that these renters are receiving.
Absolutely.
So, Hetal, what role does the government have to play? We've just seen the 2018 budget from Philip Hammond, which have a number of policies. Can you talk a bit more about those?
Yeah, sure. So, this drive to increase housing supplies is quite clear. Successive governments have always promised this, but it feels like we're finally getting closer to that being realised. There are a couple of specific measures in the budget which were really to help the housing market overall. We saw that there was the Help to Buy is going to be extended again. Probably won't be extended beyond, I think it's 2023, but that is something that the Chancellor announced. And also a stamp duty relief on shared ownership homes up to 500,000 as well. So it's just helping those first-time buyers, helping that part of the market, which then obviously trickles up through the rest of the housing chain. So we are seeing those measures come through, which should be supportive of the overall market.
So I guess the government's helping both sides, both helping through the demand side and the supply side. Would you both agree with that?
Yeah, yes. I would.
Yes.
Yep.
So my last question to both of you is our new segment that we're doing, what's making you happy in markets? So Ellie, what's making you happy?
What makes me happy is alliteration. I like reading, as you can probably tell. So today or over the weekend, we saw the Met merch news story, which was the London Metropolitan Police have decided to launch its own range of clothing and homeware, following on from the NYU. Yes. It may be a slow news weekend. Yeah. Following on from or looking to emulate the NYU, the New York Police Department and their NYPD branded clothing that's worn by various, I can't name names, can I, celebrities over in the States. So the Met is looking to diversify its revenue streams, or at least try and address.
A Met hoodie, a Met beanie,
Yes, it has licensed its logo. So, but this came out after Halloween, I noticed, so you can't go and impersonate a police officer. But coming to a high street near you is some Met merch. So not only is that going to solve the problems of the Metropolitan's funding, but also could be the saviour of the British high street.
I mean, for podcast listeners, next photo you'll see of me will be in a massive Met oversized T-shirt. Hetal, what's making you happy in markets?
I don't think I can beat that. But I did look at the price of gold this morning and I realised that it's fallen 6% through the course of this year, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things isn't dramatic. But given I like my shiny, that makes me happy.
So everyone go out to Timpson's and buy some gold.
I know.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for being here and talking about the nation's favourite topic, UK housing. Thank you so much to Eleanor Jukes. Thank you for joining us.
I think the final question mark is, are you going to be a residual renter, a lifetime renter?
Oh, I'm going to...
What's your housing journey?
I'm going to lifetime rent. I think my journey is very short, but let's not impute more morbidness into saying my journey's short, please. How about you, Ellie? Lifetime renting for you?
Oh, yes, I have to be a lifetime renter.
Lifetime renting. Hetal, still happy in your own occupy owner life.
Yeah, for now. You might convince me otherwise when we have a big bill to fix the roof or something.
As Ellie said, 2 out of 3. Thank you so much for my wonderful guests for joining us. Thank you to our wonderful production team and, of course, Holly McNulty, our wonderful producer. And thank you to you for listening to LGM Talks. Be sure to catch up with us next week. Goodbye. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.